Let me encourage you this morning to find your sermon notes. Now, they look a little differently than this. It's the full page. One side's announcement. The other is the sermon notes. Of course, it looks different because I have the answers and you don't. So, fill them in if you like, and then know that this is a loose outline of the message today. So, you can determine whether or not I'm following it, and that should be enough to keep you awake. So, about 70 years ago, more or less, there was a conference in London, England, and the conference invited all of these scholars to come, and they were debating. They were debating the various world religions, and how were they all similar, how were they different. And of course, Christianity comes up, and well, I would guess that a lot of you could probably tell us what's different about Christianity. For example, the incarnation, right? God came down to earth and became human, flesh and blood and bone, just like you and me. And of course, there is the resurrection, someone who dies and comes back to life. The instrument of death, the cross, is unusual in religion. Well, the debate was going on, and we could continue here today. And then someone walked in, a very famous person, C.S. Lewis. Now, you know C.S. Lewis from Mere Christianity and other books. You may not know that at one time, C.S. Lewis was not a believer. He grew up in a Christian household, but then he fell away, and he became a skeptic. And he thought, well, I'm not sure I believe all that stuff my parents taught me. And then he became a full-fledged atheist. Didn't believe at all. Didn't even believe that there was a God. But then he was converted as he was a professor at Oxford by some of his colleagues. So it's C.S. Lewis, you know him. He walks into the room and he asks a very simple question. You know, what's all the fuss about? And what's going on? And they explain, we are debating how Christianity is different. And he said, well, that's easy. It's really simple, actually. It's grace. It's grace. Every other religion wants to get to God by doing something. And it stems from our desire as children. Parents, you know how children are. When something doesn't go quite right, when they feel like they've been wrong, what do they always say? This is not fair. This is not fair. That's how they usually say it. Because our human nature is to get what we deserve. That's what we want. We want fairness. We want justice. And so in Buddhism, there is the eightfold path to enlightenment. And Hindus have karma, you know, what goes around comes around, and around, and around, and around, in this life, and the next, and the next, and the next. Until finally you get to nirvana. And then there are the Jews who have 613 laws. Can you imagine? I have trouble with 10. 613. Get them all right. And the Muslims, five pillars of Islam. If you obey them all, then you gain favor with Allah and you get to go to heaven and you get to get married to 144 virgins. So that's the plan. Every religion, save one, is about what we do. Only Christianity does not have a path to God, but has a person who comes down to us, who teaches and lives and dies and rises again to convince the skeptics in the world that it's all about God's grace. And then stuff happens, doesn't it? Life happens. That's what we have in our reading for today. Take a look again at that in your notes. Jesus passed by and he saw a man blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned? That's the question. Rabbi, who sinned? This man or his parents, that he was born blind. Now, here's a better question for us. What kind of God would do that? What kind of God did these disciples have? I mean, is God up in heaven? He says, oh, look, fella, you've been cheating on your taxes again. You haven't been in church for a month. And I know you've been wasting time at work looking at those March Madness brackets. So, your beautiful wife, pregnant with your first child, I'm going to just zap her. I'll show you. I will zap him and make him blind. What kind of a God would do that? And yet it was a common belief in that time that illness and disfigurement and tragedy was a result of sin. So the question, a legitimate question, an easy question, Rabbi, who sinned? Is it this man who's being punished for all that he's going to do wrong? Or is it his parents? For all they've done wrong, we're going to punish the little baby. Now, for us in our modern time, to our modern ears, this all sounds rather incredible, doesn't it? Or does it? What's the first question you ask when something bad happens to you in your life? Especially if it's something that you haven't really deserve. Why me? Why, Lord? You know, even like that, you know, you're shaking your fist up there. Why? We ask these questions. I've got three of them here in your notes, and there's probably a whole lot more. You know, why? How come? Whose fault is it? Lord, are you still punishing me for all those things I did wrong in college? I mean, it seems like there should be a statute of limitations, don't you think? And more importantly, why would God allow this? Why would he allow it to happen? Because we think, if God is in charge, and isn't God in charge? I mean, he's the creator of the universe. If God is in charge, how can this tragedy happen? And even more importantly, if God is so loving, why must I suffer? I mean, it's bad enough if all you poor people suffer. I mean, I feel sorry for you. But when it happens to us personally, why must I suffer? And we come to the conclusion, either God's not in charge, he's not really all powerful, if there's a God at all, or he doesn't love me. Because if there is a God and he is in charge, surely he wouldn't allow this to happen if he truly loved me. Well, I'm here to tell you today, my friends, if you don't already know this, if you haven't lived long enough, if you haven't discovered it for yourself, there is no easy answer. There's not. It's not as simple as saying God isn't in charge or he doesn't love me. It's not as simple as pointing our finger and saying, well, they sinned, or no, they sinned, or no, you sinned. So let me give you a little analogy that might help. Does anybody know what an EOD expert is? EOD? Explosives, ordnance. What's the D? Disposal. You are good. An expert at blowing up bombs. Now, I don't know anything about this. I was not in the military. My father was. Years ago, he was in the Korean War. And he was an EOD of sorts. He blew up things, which explains a lot why we always had dynamite around the house as a kid. Wouldn't let me use it. Good thing. An EOD. There was a guy by the name of an expert. His name was Charles Hall. Charles Hall goes all the way around the world and he blows up things. So he's been to Iraq, he's been to Bosnia, even Cambodia, because evidently there's still landmines left over, unexploded, there in Cambodia from the Vietnam War. And he says that when he reads in the newspaper about a war, he's happy. Now, I think he's a little warped. He says he's happy and he says, great, more work for me. Because he has to go and eventually blow these things up. Well, here's the connection, and you may not catch this at first. Charles Hall often finds himself in minefields not of his making. And so do we, don't we? Don't we often find ourselves in a minefield not of our own making? This last week, I got a phone call from an old friend in Atlanta where I was pastor before I came here. She works at the church and she keeps us informed about people there. And she told my wife and I about a couple that we dearly loved, pillars of the church. The wife was about 50 years old. When we left, she had a teenage daughter and two little ones. They were probably 5 and 6, two little boys, Ethan and Evan, when we left. In January, she got news that she had pancreatic cancer. And this is a woman who did everything right. I mean, she took care of her body. Didn't smoke, didn't drink, ate the right foods, exercised regularly, taught in her Sunday school, literally was there every single week. Her funeral was last week. And not only that, a year ago, her husband had divorced her. Two boys, high school. What a minefield. No mother, no father. Trying to negotiate life in such a way. We often find ourselves in a minefield, and we ask these same questions. How come? Why me, Lord? Why? Whose fault? And why would you allow this? You know, from an early age, we have this idea that there are people who can fix things. You know, when your toy's broken, you're a little boy, who do you go to? You go to dad, fix this. You fall down, you skin your knee, you go to mom, fix this, right? And God, well, God can fix anything. God's all powerful. God made everything. And so we pray when we have a tragedy, when we're sad, when we have a problem, God, fix this. And then he doesn't. At least not always, does he? He doesn't always fix it. And so we ask, why would God allow this? Either he doesn't love me or he can't. He can't fix it. He's not powerful enough. And so, we'd like to change things, wouldn't we? Let me just ask a question here. Anybody have a DVR at home? DVR? Yep. Anybody been using that for the NCAA? You know, there a lot of these games are late at night. I've missed all these great endings. I got to get a DVR. But my wife says I would mess it up. You know, you're supposed to edit out the commercials and watch the program. She tells me I would edit out the program and just have the commercials. So, but wouldn't it be great if we could do that with life? Wouldn't it? Edit out all the bad stuff. You know, not even just fast forward, just edit it out completely, especially the unexplainable. So all of life would make sense. It would all be good. Wouldn't that be great? Well, Paul tells us, he writes to the Corinthians, it's not the way it is. It's not the way life works. Now we only see in a mirror dimly. It's like when you take your shower and there's the mirror, it's all foggy. Love to just clear that all off so we could understand it. Well, my friends, there is no easy answer. It certainly isn't that we get what we deserve and thank God for that. Because if we did get what we deserved, if life truly was fair, there would be no hope for any of us. So the Buddhists have it wrong, the Hindus have it wrong, Judaism has it wrong, Islam has it wrong. But we have a God full of grace. So how about grace? It's not the easy answer, but it's the right answer. How about a God, as it says here in your notes, that in the midst of a life filled with questions and no answers, as life often is, how about a God we can turn to, whose love we can always trust? Those of you who have been members here at Emmanuel for some time, do you remember the picture at the old historic church? The one on the right as you're facing the altar. What's over there, anybody? It's a good shepherd. What a great picture, isn't it? Wonderful picture. There's Jesus. He has a little lamb on his back. What a great picture of God. And yet, I would assert it's not the best picture. Or maybe you've seen the picture of Jesus. And we use those words again today in Hayden's baptism. Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me." Have you seen that picture? Where Jesus is kneeling and all the little kids are coming to him. Great picture. But not the best picture. The best picture of God, the best picture of Jesus Christ is always one where he's hanging on the cross. And we think it's kind of gruesome. Jesus hanging on the cross. But it's the best picture because here Jesus is suffering. And he is dying out of love for you and me. Ours is a God who suffers with us, no matter what you're going through, no matter what you will go through. He suffers with you. And so we can come to this conclusion. If God was present in the suffering and death of Jesus Christ, then he is absolutely present in our sufferings as well. Isn't he? And so we may not always understand the plan. I know I don't. We may not always understand. But we can know that it always, God's plan always ends in grace. When one day the Lord gathers us up in his arms and he brings us to himself in heaven. Let me close with this, a true story which illustrates God's grace. There was a man by the name of Jim. Jim was numb, almost felt like he was having an out-of-body experience because of the events of the past 12 hours. The afternoon before, Jim had called his wife, Connie, on the phone, as he always did when he left work. And he said, "I'm on my way home. I'm going to pick up little Joshua." Joshua was their four-month-old baby. 5 days a week, Jim would go to the babysitter, wonderful babysitter. She always was attentive. She always checked on Joshua. She put him down for his afternoon nap, as she always did. And then Dad would get there and pick him up and take him home, except that day. When Jim went to the crib, as he always did, and picked up his son, he was gone. He had SID, sudden infant death syndrome. No matter what he did, he could not revive him. And then after that, it was all a blur. Sirens wailing, paramedics rushing in, ride to the hospital, doctors, nurses, questions. What happened? And then decisions. The first was easy. Yes, we'll donate all of his organs. And then the really hard ones. Who do you call? Who do you call? Friends? Family? Boss? And now he said, the next morning, and of all things, he decides, "I need a haircut." Can you imagine? I need a haircut. He and Connie are new to town. They really don't know where to go. So Jim's brother says, I know a hairdresser. I'll call her." Well, she's busy. Can't get in. He explains the circumstances. "By all means, we'll work him in." And so here he is sitting in the chair, and of course she's sympathetic. What do you do now? You pour out your heart once again because by telling the story, you hope to get some sense. And so he does. And when he gets to the point where he says, and then we donated his organs, she said, wait a minute. What? We donated the organs. You won't believe this, she said. Not an hour ago, there was a woman sitting in this exact chair. And she said, can you hurry up because I need to get down to Children's Hospital. My granddaughter is getting a transplant, a heart valve that will keep her alive. My prayers are answered. And that's when Jim's healing began. He remembered the chaplain in the hospital had said, you know, we don't always understand God's plan. But maybe, just maybe, Joshua's part, his part in the plan is done. We don't always know the plan, but we can know that our God suffers with us. And he will be there every step of the way until he gathers us in his loving arms to take us to be with him in heaven. I don't know all the answers. There are no easy answers so many times. But I do know this. It's all about grace. And thank God, we do have a Lord that loves us.